97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Your AC units are going to be barking. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Joining us now is Chief Meteorologist Dave Murray. Thank you for coming on for a few minutes. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Hey, is it hot enough for you?
Yeah, is it?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, no. Gonna hear that enough. All right. So it's going to be hot, hot, hot. Extreme heat warning will be hitting a lot of different people. So what can we expect?
Yeah, the warning, it's interesting. The warning goes until Thursday at about 7 p.m. That could easily get extended. In fact, I'd be surprised if it doesn't. This is a big old Bermuda high-pressure system that finds its way from the Bermuda area in the Atlantic. It digs its way west over the eastern U.S., Midwest, really all the way to the eastern Rocky Mountains. And it's kind of a classic heat pattern for the nation. We haven't seen a good old solid Bermuda high in a couple of years, but this one's locked in. Every once in a while, you'll try to get a little impulse from the northwest that will try to penetrate that high. That it never works. Just never works. And it does look like, even though we're going to see a bit of an increase in spot afternoon thunderstorms Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, which will bring some temporary cooling for like an hour or so, and then the temperatures jump right back. It does look like the Bermuda high winds, and I don't see any reason not to extend this thing through next week, all of next week.
Really? Right. Oh, that is so depressing.
Really?
Dave, is there any...
Oh, I thought you would like that.
Is there any rain in there? Because the yard, you know, we had a little bit of showers, and I thought, yay, something. And then is there...
Yeah, we get these pop-up storms. There's nothing out there today. It's all way to our east. There's not going to be much tomorrow. The high pressure really in control. There'll be a bit of an increase Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Not a lot of us will see it, but where they happen, there will be heavy downpours of rain and lightning. So these things, you know, don't fool with them, even though they may not be very big. They do pop up. You know, yesterday we had a couple of them in some areas of Metro St. Louis. And there was some torrential downpours, but they just don't last very long. They're really what we call pulse storms. They fire up, they do their thing, and then they collapse and they're gone.
You know, Dave, this is Fred. I had that exactly happen to me last night riding home from work. I was driving down southbound 55, and like only between two exits, it rained so hard that people were pulling over. It was just torrential downpour.
That is just what these things do. You know, when we say spot thunderstorms, it's really that's the definition, is that a lot of us don't see it, but where they happen, it really rains, and there can be some real dangerous lightning with these things. But they typically do not last very long. They don't cover a lot of ground.
I'll tell you what, it really does make me nervous to have my air conditioner run that much.
Yeah.
And I haven't set it like 78.
Oh, wow. And it's still running?
How do you do that?
Well, you get used to it, but, I mean, that's upstairs. And then at night, we'll turn it down to, like, a 73 with a ceiling fan that's just serious. But, you know, during the day, I've got but the dogs will go downstairs where it's, you know, 76 or whatever. But if you do it, and I feel like this is running all the time. If somebody has it, what's your house, Fred, like in the 60s?
No. I had to get an executive order to get it to 73.
Okay. If Fred's house is 73, is it running 24/7?
Sounds like it.
I feel like it is. It just makes me nervous.
Yeah.
That's all.
Most likely they are. Yeah, well, they'll cycle down every once in a while just to kind of cool all the parts, make sure that the Freon doesn't go crazy in the system, and then it just fires back up again. But it's real, especially in the, you know, you get the afternoon heat depending on how your house faces. And windows, you know, the best thing to do is, especially if you're working all day, is close the blinds, close the shades, close the drapes, close the house all up.
Okay.
And that will help you. That will help your AC. It will also help. It's not huge, but it will help keep your house a little cooler anyway.
You know what I found works the best in situations like this is you just lie to yourself and say it's not that bad. Just lie to yourself.
Oh, okay.
Does it work? I don't think
it
that works.
Works great. No. It's not that bad.
You can always get a big bowl of ice, put a fan on one side, and you're on the other side.
That's true. Go old school.
Yeah, it works.
All right.
It works.
All right.
Yeah, and the wife vetoes this. I try to keep it up a little bit, but you got to cool it down at night so you're at least comfortable, especially for the kids' sake.
Right.
You don't want them waking up at night. But I find that once you get the AC running and running and running, you're praying, please don't go out on me. But I got these old, you know, 30, 35-year-old units, so it's just a ticking time bomb. But it works like a charm. Not efficient, but it works like a beast. But I don't want this to be the year. Every year you say that. I don't want this to be the year. All right, so just real briefly, when is this out? Like, you say they're probably going to extend this heat warning. It could look that way.
Think so, anyway.
When is it going to be out of the system? When do you think we're in the clear?
I don't see it. I don't see it the rest of July. Isn't that, you know, wait, look at the calendar.
You're
That's
right.
not too much.
Right. 30 days out of September, April. Yeah, like Thursday.
There's two things that move these things. One is a really strong cold front from the north. Doesn't happen much in the summertime. The other is a tropical system that finds its way across the Gulf of Mexico into Texas, and then it comes up the Mississippi Valley. Those things will penetrate the dome of high pressure and kind of weaken it, squeeze it out, and get things kind of back to normal. Now, there is a tiny little tropical system kind of in the it's in the Gulf right now. It's a very tiny chance of it developing into anything, but that's the only hope that's on the weather maps right now. And I don't even really want to talk about it because it just gets everybody's hopes up.
You know,
yeah, you're right,
Canada.
Dave.
All the Canada gives us this time of year are wildfire smoke. Why can't they push some of that Arctic air down right about now?
And that, yeah, look at it this way: the Bermuda High is keeping that stuff away. There's a positive, right? Now there is smoke that's all across the upper Midwest right now, but the Bermuda High will force that stuff. Even the smoke can't penetrate the high.
Got it. All right. Dave Murray, thank you so much for joining us, explaining what's going on and breaking the news
that we are going
to be hot, hot, hot for at least the next 7 days. Ugh,
don't forget your pets. They need a lot of extra water.
Absolutely. Keep them in. But when you're in Sue's house, they're going to be hot indoors too. So make sure you have extra water there too. Let's get to Sue's news after the break. You're listening to the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk. Be a hot one. You heard it from Chief Meteorologist Dave Murray there. Extreme heat warning on the way. He believes it's going to last till the end of the month. So just get ready for that. Hot and sweaty. I need to get a handkerchief and just, you know, slowly just wipe the beads of sweat off my forehead. I had an uncle that would sweat while he ate, and he always kept a handkerchief, and he would wipe his forehead while he was eating.
Okay, a friend of mine always claimed he got the meat sweats. Is that what your uncle had?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, every time we were together, it was a major meal. Meat was always involved.
Meat sweats.
And he would be in labored breath after a while.
Uh-huh.
So, Ryan, how's school? He talked like that and wiped his forehead. And it became a family tradition to imitate Uncle Jimmy every time we would sit down.
Did you just change his name to protect the guilty?
No, that's his name.
Okay.
I don't think I've talked to him in 20 years, but he's out there somewhere. All right, Ethan, how about we do it? Sue's news.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's news. Brought to you by Sue.
What is it about the meat that makes you sweat? Fred, any ideas?
Excitement.
Well, you know what? I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, neither did I.
It's passion and love.
That's right.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my friend Paul would say, well, let's order a pizza. Okay. Don't get meat, I would say. Please. We don't want to sweat it up here this afternoon. Let's just get a veggie. Okay. On this day, well, first of all, let's talk about what day it is. It's National Vanilla Ice Cream Day.
Awesome.
Is that your favorite? Is vanilla, Ryan?
No, but it goes good with everything. You could put vanilla ice cream next to literally anything and still enjoy it.
True. You could put any topping you'd like. Gorgeous Grandma Day. I don't know who that's for, but happy Gorgeous Grandma Day. And this one I love, National Sprinkles Day. You know the little sprinkles you could put on anything? Oh, there's an ice cream place in Illinois, and I'm not gonna, somebody can call in probably and tell me where this is. But it's got sprinkles, they do, you know, one of the swirl cones, but it's got sprinkles kind of like the old DQ did with those little rocks in there. I can't tell you what they are. Like, there were they peanuts, but I call them sprinkles, and they roll the cone in there. It's the best thing known to man. Fred? Fred's looking at me.
I'm still stuck on Gorgeous Grandma's Day.
Do you think
they have a lobbying group? How do they do that?
I don't know. I think you just, you know, you could just say it's Fred Day. You can apply for
every
it.
Every day is Fred
That's
Day.
That's a good point. Thank you for bringing that up.
I got to tell you, Fred's onto something here. What if that day was created by a real creep and they just like arbitrarily said it's, what is it?
Gorgeous
awesome
Grandma Day.
Gorgeous Grandma Day. And it was actually started by some pervert.
Well, I did not think of that. Thanks for that.
Why'd you have to make Gorgeous Grandma Day such a dark thing?
Good grief. I'm trying to light it up with sprinkles. Suddenly we got that.
I'm pro sprinkles. Let's get back to sprinkles, okay?
My goodness. All right. This is not a happy story, but I did not realize this. On this day in history, 52 years ago, Fred, you might remember this. This is in 1973. St. Louis had its worst air disaster. Now, this is from Joe Sonderman's book, This Day in History. During a severe thunderstorm, an Ozark Airlines turboprop plane crashed into a hill near Umsel. There were 44 passengers on board. 38 did not make it.
I don't remember that at all.
Oh, my gosh. I
remember
either.
Ozark Airlines, yeah. But I don't remember the accident.
It was Flight 809 from Nashville, and it crashed near 70 and Florissant Road at Mount Providence School, and the NTSB concluded that the problem was it was caused by what they had then started learning, or we learned later, was wind shear.
Oh,
so it took them down 52 years ago. Wow. That just freaked me out. I had never heard that story. Neither. And 25 years ago, in 2000, it's Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods became the youngest player to win the career Grand Slam. Guess how old he was, Ethan?
25.
Good guess. Fred?
24.
That is correct.
Oh, nice.
24 years old. Not too shabby.
I'm 24. No. God, that's depressing.
It's a record-breaking performance, of course, of his in the British Open that did that. All right, they do in the summer a lot of surveys that ask about what's your favorite this, what's your favorite that. And a new survey has looked at the 50 most populated cities in America. Which is the favorite? Okay, so it's not going to be like a small town. What currently is the favorite city in America? I will give you each a hint. It is not on a coast. Ryan Recker.
So this is in the major cities, top 50
yes.
major cities.
It's going to be top 30 markets. How about that?
Let's say Milwaukee.
That's a good guess. No, Fred.
Think about Indianapolis.
No, think about popularity, Ethan. Like, what's the place to go?
Okay,
right
I got it.
What
I know
is
what it?
It
is.
Okay.
I know it.
I'm ready.
Oh, God. You guys are like set on it. I'm like, I don't know.
I think we're thinking the same thing.
I'm gonna go with I really have no idea. I'll say Kansas City just for
okay.
Throw out
Ryan,
an
say it with me on the count of three.
Three.
One,
all right.
Two,
one,
two,
three.
Nashville.
That is correct.
Oh, that's so obvious. How did it?
The kids love the Nashville, but so do the adults. It's a great place, and it really has taken off food wise. Boy, if you go to Nashville. Send me a message first. I'll send you to the good place. Nashville is the winner, but it's followed by a three-way tie between San Diego, Colorado Springs, and Virginia Beach.
Oh,
okay. All right. Coming in at number five is Charlotte, North Carolina. Denver at number six. Okay, the kids love Denver. Like my friend's kids all live there. Yeah. Well, I'll try not to. Let's hope not. Raleigh, North Carolina at number seven. San Antonio at number eight. Sorry. Ryan, I had not pre-read this, and I just got to this. Detroit has the lowest favorability. Ooh. But
doesn't surprise me.
It's followed by Oakland and Bakersfield. And it's also worth mentioning that Raleigh beats out Nashville when it comes to Americans who have actually been to the city. Because some of these people would just say, hey, what do you think is cool? What's the cool place now? And they would say, Nashville. It's just interesting. Now, I'm a person who does not like a meeting. I don't think I'm alone in this. If you've got a corporate 9-to-5 job, how much of your day is derailed by meetings? Would you say it's more or less all of it? Microsoft has a new report out that claims that office employees are interrupted by meetings, emails, and other work-related pings every 2 minutes.
Wow.
That would just drive me nuts. They say 60% of meetings are ad hoc, called at the moment. And because of all these meetings during the workday, they said there's been a 15% increase in the number of chats sent daily outside of work hours.
Is it just me, or are the meetings kind of rare here, at least for us?
Oh, yeah, we're lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are definitely lucky. But sorry, crowd.
Maybe we need more.
Crowd is not so lucky.
Do not.
But, you know, the thing is that was mentioned in that thing we talked about yesterday, the 4-day work week. People found that there were part of their happiness was that there were fewer meetings because there were fewer days and people had to be left alone to get stuff done.
Oh.
So that was a part of why people loved it. All right, there is an electrical engineer in rural Vermont who is pitching in by fixing up old payphones and installing them in spots with no cell service.
Oh.
That's kind of a clever idea. He buys them for a couple $100, adds a gadget that connects them to the internet, and installs them outside of businesses. And since they're online, you don't need a quarter. The calls are free. It's a stroke of genius.
It is.
What?
The one getting used the most is outside a library. He says kids use it to call their parents for rides. Each phone costs $10 a month in admin fees, but he pays for it, or at least has done it so far. And he's also the operator, so if you dial 0, his cell phone rings. Which I think is adorable. So I'm loving that. I just think that's a really cute idea. Now, Ethan, have you ever used a payphone?
Not ever in my life.
Have you seen one?
Like, yeah, for sure.
Have you just gone in it, or you just looked at it from afar as a something to behold?
Well, I mean, you talk about it. You may, when you said go in it, I don't know if I've ever seen one. I've seen like I don't know if I've ever seen one where you have to go inside of an enclosed space to use one.
Oh, that's interesting.
You've never seen a phone booth?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I see.
You know what I'm understanding?
What is your difference? Yeah? What do you think first when you think of one of those phone booths, Fred? I think of gum stuck on stuff.
Really? I think of the TV show Doctor Who.
That's what I also think of. It's also what I think of.
I do not watch
that. Superman?
Oh, that would be a good one.
Uh-huh.
Like, don't they have a lot of those in like London?
The red ones?
The red ones, yeah. That's what I think of.
Mm. And finally, in Sue's News, we do have today's random fact. I kind of thought Fred would like this one. I don't know why. The tongue twister, she sells seashells by the seashore, was inspired by a female paleontologist, thank you, named Mary Anning, who sold fossils out of a little stand on Dorset Beach in England in the early 1800s. Wow. So the tongue twister, she sells seashells by the seashore, inspired by a female paleontologist in England.
That is mighty random.
That is random, and that's it for Susan News.
All right, so what were in these MLK Jr. files? A Pulitzer Prize winner is joining us, historian, after the break, Dave Garro on 97.1 FM Talk. And welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Joining us now is a historian, a Pulitzer Prize winner for his biography on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It's called Bearing the Cross. And with the new released documents that came out just a few days ago, we want to welcome him, Dave Garro. Thank you for coming on in St. Louis here.
Happy to be with you.
I really find this fascinating. I think that the releasing of government documents, we have the JFK files being a big one. Now the Martin Luther King Jr. files just released the last couple of days. People have been combing through them. I know you have seen them. Is there anything that you've learned from these documents?
There's virtually nothing new here because the vast majority of these records previously were released decades ago. I first saw the main file on Dr. King's assassination, which the FBI creatively called Murkin, as in Murder of King, in 1978. You know, what we have here oftentimes is simply a re-release of documents that have been out there in multiple copies for a long time. It's very difficult for 99.9% of people to look at the National Archives webpage and make any sense of this, because you have to understand FBI numerical classification usages to even know what this sort of spreadsheet of strange numbers amounts to. You know, I've worked with FBI records for 47 years, and so, you know, I know that a 190 file means a Freedom of Information Act request, you know, and 44, which was Merkin, is a federal civil rights violation.
Oh, interesting. So, I've gone through a lot of the JFK files just because of pure curiosity. You go to the website and all these different documents are saved as PDFs. You can just kind of randomly click on page after page after page and try to find something. And, you know, there's a lot of instances where the information, though not new, it was kind of new to me. And you start to see certain patterns, things that people were saying, things that were filed a certain way. I know that you've seen all of these different documents, but was there nothing that you came across that was unique, something that you're like, oh, I don't remember seeing that before?
About a total of 4 pages in under the 62 classification, which is what the Bureau used for its dealings with the congressional investigating committees in the 1970s. I saw 2 pages. One was an internal New York office FBI memo about doing a bag job of a secret break-in at Communist Party headquarters. And even inside the FBI, a memo like that was written with some sort of coded distractions, so that your average file clerk wouldn't readily understand what the bosses were discussing. And there's a copy of a 1961 authorization signed by Robert Kennedy, then the Attorney General, about FBI microphone surveillance practices. I bet that's been released before, but I didn't remember seeing it. And then lastly, in the CIA portion of the release, there's a wonderful 2-page personnel interview that the agency did in 1973 with the black Memphis police officer who'd been the first person to rush to Dr. King's body when he was shot on that balcony at the Lorraine Motel. That black undercover officer, perchance then 6 years later, joins the CIA. And so, you know, when he's being asked to meet with the congressional committees in the 70s and later on, the CIA is trying to figure out, you know, how to, you know, protect his agency employment.
Oh, interesting. So for someone that studied this, and I mean a lot over the last couple of decades, are there any documents that you were hoping would be released? Are there any missing pieces that you just have not found but continue to search for?
There are 2 things I've expected to see in the past that I've still not seen, both of which were House Assassinations Committee interviews, which we knew took place in the late 1970s. With 2 human FBI informants, Jim Harrison, who was the FBI's informant inside Dr. King's organization in Atlanta, and then black photographer Ernest Withers, who was the FBI's most important African-American informant in Memphis. I'm certain that there would be some account of their meetings with the Assassinations Committee, but they haven't popped up yet.
You know, there's some things that I think people know about Martin Luther King Jr., and one of the stories that I think is told a lot that I don't know the whole backstory to, but I'm hoping you might be able to tell me more. Did the FBI send wiretap tapes to Martin Luther King of him admitting and talking about his infidelity with the suggestion that he would commit suicide before he received a Nobel Peace Prize. Is that right?
The letter that accompanied the tape certainly intimated that he should commit suicide, but it was timed, the deadline that the anonymous letter tried to set was actually Christmas 1964.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Nobody at Dr. King's office opened the package until early January, when it, you know, understandably made him distraught. The tape that was enclosed with the anonymous threatening letter was from microphone bugs of King's hotel rooms. You know, back in the technology of the 1960s, a wiretap was a clip put on a phone line. A bug, was a microphone that had to be, put in a room. And at the Washington Hotel where King and his friends stayed in early 1964, with the connivance of the hotel staff, they had the maids carry into those rooms lamps that had, in which the FBI had inserted the bugs into the lamps. And then the bug has a transmitter, and the FBI is literally in the room right upstairs.
Joining us here is historian, Pulitzer Prize winner for his biography on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Bearing the Cross. His name is Dave Garrow. And there was some controversy about releasing these files. I think some family members of Martin Luther King Jr. said, don't release them. Maybe it's just a publicity stunt. There's no need. But there was different reasons for it. Some people didn't want to see these things released. So what do you think about the family members that perhaps didn't want this information, to, even though it's already been out there, but to see this document dump?
Neither of the surviving King children are terribly knowledgeable about what all this entails, to say it frankly. They are fearful. They know enough to be fearful of that hotel room microphone surveillance material, which remains under federal court seal. That was taken away from the FBI in 1977 and given to the National Archives under a 50-year seal, which will expire in 2027. A few months ago, the current administration moved in court to have the seal terminated early this year. But the judge in D.C. who has the case has indicated pretty clearly at his last hearing that he's not going to move the disclosure timetable for that, up from 2027.
Do you think sometimes when we talk about the details of the files, the case, we forget about the message, the humanity of it all? Does it take away from that?
It's a very complicated story. What the FBI obtained, both from the bugs and from the wiretaps, were shared across the federal government. The most controversial thing that they overheard in that 1964 hotel room surveillance was Dr. King telling an extremely unpleasant joke about the late president. This was 6 weeks after John F. Kennedy had been assassinated. So the FBI immediately shares that with Robert Kennedy, who's still Attorney General. And at some point, Bobby described that to Jacqueline, JFK's widow. You can see online from years past that Jacqueline Kennedy, as a result, did not have positive feelings about Dr. King. And they sent all of that for years to Lyndon Johnson. Indeed, after Dr. King's 1968 murder, Johnson asked for all of those transcripts to be sent back to him so that he could reread them. Not a healthy attitude. To understand how the people at the top of the federal government dealt with Dr. King really requires us as professional scholars to deal with the reality of what happened.
Wow. Well, if people wanted to look up your book, your work, your biography, where can they go to find it?
Oh, I have a webpage where all of my non-book materials are available, just davidgarrow.com, G-A-R-R-O-W. You know, and both Bearing the Cross and my earlier book on the FBI and Pursuit of Dr. King, those are going to be in pretty much every public library.
Fantastic. Historian and Pulitzer Prize winner for his biography on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., looking at some of the released files here. Dave Garrow, thank you so much for joining us, and we really appreciate it, and thank you for your time here today.
Thank you, Ryan.
And I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Joining us after the break is Gwynne Hinman. He's the chair of the Wall That Heals Committee, and we're going to talk to him about what's being set up at the Jefferson Barrack Park and what you can do to help support it.
Ryan,
so don't go anywhere. Yes.
Gwynne is a she.
Ah, well, Gwynne will be joining
and
us.
She's
there.
Awesome.
I can't wait to talk to Gwynne after the break. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in. Joining us now is the chair of the Wall That Heals Committee. It's Gwynne Hinman. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Hi there. Thank you guys so much for having me.
So this is a three-quarter scale replica of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. You probably have seen pictures of it in D.C., maybe not seen it in person, but this gives you an opportunity to give some respect to Vietnam veterans, see something that's traveling, and they could do this starting tomorrow at Jefferson Barracks. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. Well, technically, we're open now. The wall is here. It was assembled today, and we'll be open 24 hours a day until Sunday afternoon.
Gwynne, talk about the importance of this. What's the meaning? Because this one is a sanctioned actual replica that travels around the country. And to get it to St. Louis is a big deal. And talk about what it means to people to be able to see this.
Yeah, absolutely. So our application, which we submitted over a year ago, our application was chosen out of 130 applicants. And so it means the world to us to be given this opportunity. But more importantly, to bring the wall to Jefferson Barracks, which is the final resting place of so many of the names on that wall, has been really deeply significant for all of us. So we're proud to offer this opportunity for our veterans to experience the wall in their community. So a lot of times we hear that people just haven't been able to travel to D.C. or maybe they haven't felt like they could face the wall. And having it here in their backyard with their friends and family around them makes it a lot easier.
So this wall, it's three-quarter replica scale. So every name that is in Washington, D.C. is on this replica?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's an exact replica. So the wall came to us from the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund. And so they are the nonprofit that are the keepers and the creators of the wall. So there's 58,281 names on the wall, and over 450 of those are St. Louisans.
Oh, wow. Gosh, Gwynne. Tell mm-hmm. us how long it's here. I know it's not here long. The grand opening tomorrow, you say you can access it now, but the grand opening tomorrow, and then it leaves on the 27th, yes?
Yes, yes. So grand opening is on Thursday morning and then open 24 hours a day until Sunday at 2 p.m. when we have a closing ceremony. So we'll have a number of events during those days. So each evening at sunset, we'll be playing taps, which, you know, as you can imagine, will be a very moving experience. We have our opening ceremony tomorrow on Thursday. And then Friday evening, we have a candlelight PTSD memorial ceremony. So that'll be at sunset as well. And that's just to honor and recognize those who came home and still suffer.
So I want to make sure, are you taking donations? Is it ticketed or anything like that? Or can you just come and experience it?
So the event is free to the public. All of the events and the wall and coming out here, parking, everything is free. We want to do this for the community so they can come out and experience the wall. The VVMF, the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund, they will be accepting donations. Again, they're a nonprofit. And so, you know, they do all of this through the goodwill of donations and people helping to support them.
Wow. I keep thinking of it. Let's say you have kids now, and hey, take the kids and say, we're going to take grandpa to the wall. This is something you have to take advantage of while it's here in St. Louis. Again, just go to Jefferson Barracks, and I'm guessing there's signs. People will be directed where to go.
Yes. So the wall that heals is in Jefferson Barracks Park. So it's not at the cemetery, but it's in the park. And it's right next to the Powder Magazine Museum. And the address is 399 CCC Road. But there'll be tons of signs. If you can make your way into the park side, you should be able to find your way to the wall.
Gwen, thank you for applying and for getting this here, because this is a really big deal, especially for those who couldn't travel. And I didn't realize there were that many St. Louisans listed on the wall. So thank you.
Right. This is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we were all surprised to learn that, too. And so we're just so honored to be able to do this for them and for their families, and just to share this with our community.
Yep, the wall that heals at Jefferson Barrack Park. Go check it out the next couple of days. Take advantage of it while it's here. Do not miss it. Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey joining us after the break on 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.